Hello, welcome to Outdoors in Scotland. My name's John Burns, and this is my little podcast for people who like to be outdoors in Scotland, or pretty well anywhere else for that matter. My guest today has been a member of the Dartmoor Search and Rescue Team for over 30 years. Now, I've got to admit, I don't know a lot about Dartmoor. In terms of a sort of wild or rugged area, it's about as far from where I live in Inverness as it's possible to get in the British Isles. So it's diametrically opposed to us in terms of our geography. But the one thing I do know, or I could be wrong about this, but on the edges, on the fringes of Dartmoor, I believe, there's a place called Buckfast, which for my Scottish listeners will know that there's a certain beverage produced there, which has been very popular in Scotland for many years. So I'll just leave it at that. I'm not sure whether that's true anymore, but I'm sure Kelvin will be able to tell us. Hi, Kelvin, how are you?
Hi, John. Nice to talk to you and say thank you for inviting me along this afternoon.
Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. Now, you've lived for over 38 years in Devon, is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I was born in Southampton, but I moved down to Devon for work just over 38 years ago.
Oh, right. So you've obviously settled there well, you know. Tell
Well, I've now
us.
lived in Devon longer than I did in Hampshire. So,
Well, there
yeah.
you go.
You're not a local,
I'm the
though.
same in Scotland, I must admit. So there you go. I
Excellent.
was going to ask you, I mean, for people who've never visited Dartmoor, I mean, it's a famous area, but maybe can you tell us a little bit about how would you describe Dartmoor?
Today, gorgeous. Last night, bleak and horrible.
Okay.
Dartmoor is a fascinating place. It is a true wilderness. If I remember correctly,
Right.
it's 365 square miles, although I
Right,
think they're now
right.
saying it's 368 miles, of which I believe 112 is pure wilderness, as
Right.
in it's not farmed. So.
Okay. Okay. And when you say wilderness, I mean, obviously it's grazed and stuff, isn't it? I mean, I've heard about the Dartmoor ponies. They're a feature, aren't they?
Yeah.
Is it a natural wilderness, or is it man-made, if you know what I mean? Is the landscape, would the landscape be like that, or has it been like that a long, long time?
No, I mean it was say formed many, many thousands of years ago, but the industry that's gone on the more has really sort of scarred it in some places with tin workings, quarrying. Yeah, mainly those sort of things have really sort of damaged the moor to
But
make it what it is today.
I mean, from what I've seen of it is a huge rolling open area, and it's one of the few places in England, certainly, where it's legal to wild camp. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So long as you don't spend, I think it's more than 2 days in one spot and you've got to be away from car parks. It did get a little bit busy. After lockdown, lots of camper vans appearing,
Oh,
and I've
yeah.
suddenly noticed signs now where camper vans aren't allowed in certain car parks on the moor
Oh,
now.
yeah. That's
But
quite
so
bad.
we can still camp. We get a little bit of trouble there. It's been in the news with landowners,
Yes.
not wanting people on their land and camping. But on the whole, providing you're sensible, keep
Yeah.
out of the way, and you don't get stopped.
Yeah. And there was quite a lot of controversy about, I think landowners were trying to limit access. Is that right? Oh, not that long ago.
That's right. There was a big case, and I believe the latest is the where people protested against it. At the moment, it's back to as it was, where we can camp wherever we like,
Okay.
within reason.
Yeah. I mean, Dartmoor sounds to me to be an interesting area in that it is, as you say, a very large, wild area, really. But it's actually surrounded by quite high population densities, which brings its own challenges. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, if you go right in the south, we got the big town of Plymouth.
Yeah.
Um,
Yeah.
my my side of it is really the sort of Newton Abbot to Exeter area, and on the northern side, you've got the areas of Okehampton. I mean, sometimes on calls we can get stuck in traffic, but majority of calls are in the evening or late at night, so it's not too bad then. You do get the honeypot sights. Now, from the front of my house, I can look out over Hator. Hator is a, you know, very what they call a honeypot site where they try to get tourists to come to. So okay. All the erosion happens there to save it going all over the moor.
Right, so tell us about the tours. I've heard about the Dartmoor tours, but I don't know much about them. What is a tour exactly?
What is a tour and what's not a tour?
Have I started it? I kicked a can over a can of worms there.
You certainly have. I actually found a colleague of mine, Steve Jones, who's been in the rescue team, and he's just over 40 years in the team. Because you sort of, if you do a Google search, they'll say there's about 160 named tours on Dartmoor.
Right.
If you go on to a Harvey's map, they say there's 195 tours. Steve has climbed 186 and he said 7 are on private land, which he hasn't got to yet.
Right.
But he seems to believe that there's over 340 tours. But sometimes you see a tour as a, you know, big pile of granite on the top of a hill.
So is it a rocky outcrop? Am I right in thinking that?
It's a rocky outcrop, yeah.
Right.
On top of the moorland.
So it's normally on a summit, is it?
Yeah, normally on a summit. But then there's some of them are on, there's a tour called Bell Tor, which is actually on the side of Chinkwell Tor. But then the opposite side of the road, there's a big pile of rocks just as exciting as Bell Tor, which is called Bone Hill Rocks. So is that a tour or not? So,
okay.
But yes, Dartmoor is known for its tours.
Right. So when you moved, I think it was 1992, you moved to Ashburton. Is that when you began exploring Dartmoor, or had you kind of been there before?
No, it was really when I moved down here. Being comes from Hampshire and Southampton, my sort of playground was the likes of the New Forest.
Okay.
So I was a Boy Scout and loved the outdoors. So when I moved down here and, the first few days of living here in Kingstainton, which is near Newton Abbot, I used to get these beautiful views out over the moor. So I started exploring them. My son started going as scouts. I started to help out and just literally fell in love with the place.
Right. Is that when you sort of began to explore it yourself then?
Yes. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. It wasn't until 1992 when I actually joined the rescue team.
Yeah, what? How did you come to join the rescue team then?
By bumping into some of them at one of the big, there's a big out of town shopping centre here called Trago Meals, which most people have heard of down here. And I just got talking to one of the guys and I got invited along and then suddenly found that, you know, navigating in the dark isn't the same as navigating in daylight. So there was a steep learning curve. Start with, and so I've been in the team ever since.
Oh, right, okay. And it sounds like quite a busy team, really.
Yeah, this year, and we should never say this because no doubt will be out tonight. This year has been a quiet year.
Right.
We did have a quick look. Last year we did, I think it was around about 40 call-outs.
Right, that's quite a lot.
And this year, I think we're at 27 or 28 at the moment. So this year has been a little bit quieter.
I hope you're touching wood as you say that.
I am literally holding on to
Is that when you're talking about the 40 calls, is that the Ashburton team or is that...
That's just Ashburton team.
Right, yeah. I thought you probably would. The Dartmoor Search and Rescue is covered by a number of teams. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, there's four teams. There's us, Ashburton. Then we've got Okehampton team. Then there's Tavistock team and a Plymouth team.
Right.
We've all got similar membership, so there's over 200 volunteers in the Dartmoor Rescue Team.
Do you think that, I mean, it's very, obviously Dartmoor is very different in character from the hills that I know in the Scottish Highlands, but nevertheless, it's a remote area. Would you say there are any particular challenges that Dartmoor possesses for people who are walking on the moors there?
Yeah, if you've probably seen the films about the Dartmoor Mist, the it can go from being quite easy walking, you can see where you're going, and in seconds it can just literally mist over and be, you know, you're completely in fog and mist.
All right. Why is that? Does it come in off the sea or?
Yeah, I guess it does. It does come off the sea.
Right.
But it just seems to roll in, and I've seen it. You sometimes see it in the movies, how the sort of mist comes in, like the Hound of the Baskervilles and that. And it really is like that. And it's also, in some areas, it's quite bleak and it can be quite boggy because we got the mires there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does have its own challenges.
And obviously, it's very accessible to a lot of people, which can be a challenge in itself, really.
Yeah, as I say, the Hator area near where I live is it is a sort of a popular place that people down here on holiday will go and visit because, as you've said, there is the Dartmoor ponies and there's a two or three tours very easy to climb.
Right,
And in fact, Hator itself has actually got a few little steps, well, it's got some steps cut into it. So people will go up there and venture in. But it's like most places, once you go beyond the main tours, it's quite remote and you get a few sort of dog walkers or locals out there. But where the tours are, you will get a lot of tourists on those.
So you've got what looks to me to be a relatively difficult area to navigate, particularly in mist, I would have thought. As you said, you get about roughly, well, you've had around about 40 call outs last year and that sort of stuff. What are you mostly called out to attend to?
Things have changed a little bit. We out of those 40 calls, it may only be 20, 25 of those actually out on Dartmoor because say we work for the police and our skills can be used rurally or in urban farmland area. I mean, if I take the last four calls we've had. Two of those have been off the moor for high risk missing people, but they were off the moor, and two of those were on the moor. One of those was an actual. It was a climber that had finished his climb, was packing up his gear. I think he stepped backwards or something, and literally fell down in between some rocks. Got stuck, hit his head. So that was more of a case, not necessarily a search, because it was
You
a
know
known
where it was,
place. Yeah, and the other one that was a cyclist backpacking across the moor that come off and with a group and injured their knee.
So
Yeah,
there is
it's
rock,
it.
there is, I didn't realize that there is actually rock climbing on Dartmoor, is there?
Oh yes, yeah.
Is that
I
what you
mean,
call it?
Hator was a well-known area for rock climbing. Houndtor, you get a lot of groups at Houndtor.
Nice.
Drewerstone, that's a very popular area. That's down nearer Plymouth.
Right.
So yeah, and within the team, we've got our own ropes team, which are all experienced climbers. So
Right.
they're the ones that like to tie the string and dangle off of it.
So
Yeah.
that you probably don't get many cliff rescues, but I suppose you've got to be equipped for that, haven't you, really?
Yeah, we do get the one or two, but it's also very steep ground, and there can be some, lowering. Yeah, we practice a lot lowering stretches down steep ground. So we cover the Dark Gorge, which is we get a lot of, other people who go missing there or kayakers that will get injured. That's where the River Dart comes down through part of the moor. And it's a very beautiful valley, but it is very, very tricky to evacuate casualties from there. So we have a system of where we work, our rope team has set up screamers to help us get the stretchers out of the valleys.
Well, you obviously you've got to be prepared for everything, really, haven't you?
We certainly have. I mean, we can be literally tonight I could be out on the moor looking for somebody or it could be I could be along the as far across as Sidmouth, where we may be called in to help out the Coast Guard. So because we got the coastline as well,
Well, you've got
so
response to
we
the
work
coastline.
closely
Oh,
with the
right. I
Coast
didn't
Guard.
realise that. Okay. So that's quite a range of different environments, isn't it? Quite challenging in its own way. Obviously, you're quite right. And part of the role of search and rescue teams is to assist the police in any environment, really, that they struggle to access or where they need additional manpower, which is a really important part of what you do at the time.
Yeah, well, so we do work for the police, and that's the same as the other rescue teams. To contact it is through the police.
I mean, if you could give a piece of advice really to folk who are perhaps not that familiar really with being in the outdoors and think, oh, I've only been on Dartmoor once. It's probably an area which it's fairly easy to underestimate. Does that then make any sense to you at all?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, especially say if the mist comes down, we have a little saying down here, you get pixie lead.
Of course. What does that mean, pixie lead?
Well, the pixies come and lead you astray because we got
That
the
one.
dark.
That's brilliant.
That's the excuses anyway.
It wasn't me, it was the Pixies.
Was
That's
the pixies.
fair
Yeah,
enough.
we got lots of legends like that down on
Oh,
Dartmoor.
really? Oh, wow. Okay. So you never rescued a Pixie, I take it then.
Not yet, not yet.
There's
As
always a first, isn't
a
it?
first, yeah. I think I'll leave the team when I do.
Yes, I have to probably ask you to leave it and just rest
Well,
yourself.
they'll ask me, as you say, they'll ask me to leave.
I mean, it's a really it's an area that can change very fast. The mist wasn't something I was really that aware of, but obviously that could be very challenging for people who are not prepared for that sort of thing, couldn't it?
Oh yeah. It's really a case of knowing. It's the things you teach. I teach in navigation is to know where you are at all times.
Yeah, not, I mean, as you know, navigation's changed an awful lot over the last, 15 or 20 years with mobile phones and with GPS and all that sort of stuff. I mean, a lot of people today probably have never used a map and compass.
I would say that's probably correct. Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and I can understand why that is. One of the difficulties, I think, if you can say to people, oh, well, you take your GPS or whatever, but you should always have a map and compass to back it up. The problem with that is that if you're not familiar with using a map, if it's not a skill that you've practiced, it's actually very hard to acquire, you know. Is that true? Is that a fair comment, do you think?
I would say that is definitely a fair comment. I mean, we had our annual assessment day for new trainees.
All right. Okay.
And so we put them through their sort of paces and they learn a little bit about the team and explain to them it's all about sort of teamwork. But then they have to go out onto the moor in daylight. So then it becomes dark and they have to practice navigation, their pacing and things like that. And they are not allowed to use GPS or mobile phone apps or anything like that. Although we've got them and it can certainly help you out.
Oh, good. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But they have to have the core skills to start with, to know their pacing, their timings, how to read a map, and to be able to use a compass accurately.
Yeah, you see, I was guilty for many years of being a bit of a Luddite, you see. I resisted using GPS for a long time, but partly because I kind of feel that you spend your life looking at bloody screens these days, and it's really nice to get out on the hills and not have a screen in front of you. But then my eyesight got so bad, I realized at night I had to use GPS, and so I've gone for that. In talking about new technology, presumably, do you use drones very much these days?
Well, yes, that is something that is coming in. The police are certainly using drones,
Right.
and we're starting to get our own drone team.
All right. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah.
We've got a character in the team, a guy called Alec Collier. Alec was one of the founder members of our team.
Right.
Next year, along with us, he celebrates 50 years in the team.
50 years.
He's about a year older than me, but he used to work as a BBC cameraman,
All
so he
right.
loves his technology and
Oh, is
filming.
it the gadgets then? Yeah.
He's
That's
in the gadgets big style and he can sort of mend and fix anything
really
technique.
handy.
So he is a drone pilot. So
Right.
this is all very new. And we're starting to train a couple of other pilots up as well,
Right.
drone pilots. So yes, we will be using the drones.
I mean, obviously, if it's good visibility, drones can be really handy because they're obviously up faster than the, you know, they're there. Faster than a helicopter, really. You've got them with you. I think, as far as I'm aware, they're still a bit limited in high winds. Is that right?
Yes, I would say so, and as you say, visibility
Yeah,
as
if you can't
well.
see, you can't. There's not much point in having a drone if you can't see, really, is there? But
No, but you can hear the blinking things.
what other sort of new technology are you bringing into the team at the moment? Is there anything else you're starting to use?
Drones are, say, definitely one.
Yeah.
We're starting to have more mapping software called
Right.
SARMAN and SAR, yeah,
Okay.
SARMAN. Where the and also our radios are now GPS tracked, so our
Right.
search manager can actually see
I can see
where
where
we
you
are.
are. Oh,
Yeah,
you can't have nipped down the pub when
we
they're...
can't have a yeah, they know when we stop for a sneaky cup of tea on
Oh,
training.
blimey. It's nothing sacred, really, you know.
No,
Yeah,
it doesn't work when you turn the radio off, though.
I never thought about that. You can turn it off. Yeah, that sounds quite handy.
No, as I
Well,
say, there's something else we've started to be using as
oh yeah.
well, and I can't really go into the detail of it
Oh
because
God.
I'm still learning it myself. And that's something called Zello,
Right.
which can overcome some of the comms issues. I'm sure when you were in the
Yes.
teams,
Oh yes.
in valleys and things like that. Whereas Zello turns our mobile phones into walkie-talkies, so we can use phone bands and radio bands as well. So there's a lot more opportunities to get a signal to get back to our control vehicle.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's all kinds of new technology coming in. So there's even, I think there's some, I don't fully understand it, but there's some technology that can sort of predict in a landscape the most common places for people to be if you're searching for people, you know. But I'm not sure how that works, but that's about there. So it sounds like it's a really thriving little team, and it sounds like you're doing some really valuable jobs. Are you... In terms of you sort of getting new members and keeping the team going, is that an issue for you, or are you okay for volunteers and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, we're okay. I mean, on the assessment day on Saturday, I believe we had it's either 18 or 19 people that wanted to join the team, and those had been whittled down, I believe, from a lot more. But we only had space for four trainees.
Having too many folk is quite a good place to be, really, isn't it? I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
And I we're not. I mean, and do you have dog handlers in your team? Is that something you have?
Yeah, we've got two dogs at the moment, and they're two dog handlers, Paula and Chris.
Right.
They're training their next generation of dogs. So we've always had dog handlers, although there was probably a gap of about 10 years when we didn't, and we had to call them in from SADA. But now we've got two dogs within our team as well now.
Because that I suppose we've talked about the new technology, and that's dogs are the old technology, but there's we haven't really found anything to compete with a dog's nose yet, as far as
no.
I know. They're a really valuable asset, dogs, you know, they're great.
One of the old dog handlers many years ago, he did a couple of talks for me to like a scout group, and he used to say to people, if you took the senses from your nose for your smell, for smelling, on a human it would be about the size of a postage stamp, but a dog would be about the size of a handkerchief.
Well, they can smell a crisp at 300 yards, in my experience.
Yeah.
They're pretty good at that, you know. Anyway, one of the things I wanted to say before we close is I'm hoping, with a bit of luck, I might be able to come down to see you and to Ashburton and maybe perform my little one-man show, Bothy Tales. So that,
yes, we're looking forward to that if we can
let's
arrange
see
it.
If we can do that. That'd be great. It'd be interesting to come down and do that. So always nice to go to different places. Obviously, that'd be hopefully a way of raising funds for the team. And it's important to realise, obviously, that you're all volunteers, and you've got, as you're talking about, you know, you've got drones to buy, you've got vehicles to run. It's an expensive thing running a mountain rescue team. So if folk have enjoyed this, what I'll do is I'll put a little donate button on the page of this podcast, and then
hopefully please do.
You can raise some money for what is incredibly valuable work. I mean, I remember from my time in the rescue team, one of the great rewarding things is if you rescue people, they are incredibly pleased to see you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's one way of getting a really good welcome. I've never had anybody grumpy when I turned up anyway. Anyway, listen, Kel, it's been fantastic talking to you and hearing about the work of the Ashburton team and about Dartmoor itself. And I wish you and your colleagues and the rescue team all the best, and I hope you have a quiet time.
Yeah, but before I go, I do have a little bone to pick with you, though.
Oh, right, go ahead.
In your book, Hot Tent Diaries,
right?
You described some you on page 278. You
Blimey,
said
I
that
didn't even ask. Go on.
You said that you get these people out there that age is just a number, and they spend their days walking endlessly uphill, and they're normally stick thin.
Yeah.
Well, if you'd asked me to describe myself, I would have been one of those people.
That's actually written from, that's written from envy, you realise that, don't you?
Because
I'm not, I think stick thin is not the way you describe me, you know.
No, I am.
That's great. I'm glad you enjoyed your time there, and glad you enjoyed your time on the rescue. And thanks very much for talking to me.
And thank you. Thank you, John. Goodbye.
Bye. And that was Kelvin Bull talking to us about the work of the Dartmoor search and rescue team. I know at the moment they are desperately needing to raise funds to replace two ancient Land Rovers. So if you have a few spare quid, it'd be really great if you could give a little helping hand, you know. just to let you know, coming up on Outdoors in Scotland, I'm very privileged to say, actually, an interview with Dennis Gray, an incredibly experienced climber. I suppose you've got to call him a veteran. Even to me, he's a veteran. But he's a man who climbed with the likes of Don Williams and Joe Brown and Tom Petty. And so he's probably got more experience in his little finger than I've got in my whole body. So it would be great to talk to him. We'll also be having our first, I don't know, slugfest sort of contest on the show. It's going to be me versus Andrew Tyrrell. And he's an advocate of the igloo, and I'll be in my corner. There's going to be the hot tent, so we're going to slug it out and see which is best, the hot tent or the igloo. So that'll be fun. Looking forward to that. So I do hope you can tune in for that. I really hope you've enjoyed the show, and I hope to see you again. Thanks very much for that. Bye bye.